Good to be with you. I bring you the greetings of your brothers and sisters in the churches of the National Association. We had a wonderful annual meeting, probably the most congenial annual meeting I've experienced in my 10 years. We passed several measures at our meeting that are very important to our life together and our future together. But I am delighted to be with you this morning to thank you as well for your prayers and for being the church you are. You have an important place in the history of our National Association, and the way you go about participating in that work is an example to our other sister churches. I also want to thank especially those of you who were so involved several years ago in the beginning of our Branching Out campaign. Merrill York and Bill Edens were two of the many people here who pioneered our effort to begin the campaign with church participation, individual participation within our churches, and you set the mark very high. I want to thank you for that. I know you are in a search process, and that process is always very involved, can be exciting, can be challenging, can be stressful, but be assured that we have you in our prayers, and we are there to help if you need that help in the search process. Our gospel lesson this morning is taken from the Gospel of Luke, the 14th chapter. I'm going to read the first verse and then skip to verse 7, and I'll tell you later on why the lectionary reading is that way. On one occasion when Jesus was going to the house of a leader of the Pharisees to eat a meal on the Sabbath, they were watching him closely. When he noticed how the guests chose the places of honor, he told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor. In case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host, and the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, give this person your place, and then in disgrace, you would start to take the lowest place. But when you are invited, go and sit down at the lowest place, so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He also said to one who had been invited, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, and you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Let us pray. Almighty God, your word is like a lamp. So shine your light on us that we might understand, and in understanding, we might be better prepared to be your disciples in just such a time as this. Amen. Next week is Labor Day. Summer will be officially over. Now, the calendar says it's going to be a couple more weeks beyond that, but all of us know here this morning that Labor Day is the real end of summer. School will start, buses will fill our streets in the mornings, and mid-afternoons, football has started, and, of course, the decision has been made. Brett Favre will play this year. Not that any of us from this place care about that. Christian education programs will begin again. I suspect, in fact, I saw your green sheet this morning, all kinds of announcements about startups and end of the summer and new beginnings are in that, announcing events which are pointed toward continuing your education of the mind and the heart and the soul of every age in your church. There will be lots of storytelling in the next couple of weeks about summer. What you did, who you saw, the important events of your last 2.5 months. With that in mind, I'm going to suggest we get started a bit early, and I'm going to ask you to think for a moment about the last 2 months or so in your own life. Recall when you saw or experienced the work of God this summer in your life. And while I'm suggesting a couple things that happened in my life, I want you to think of your own. Unusual stories, fun stories, amazing insights. I'll bet there are some, and it's a good way to introduce the gospel this morning. One moment for me was after the last business session of our annual meeting. It wasn't immediate. The awareness of God actually came from a couple, Carl and Elaine Fleming. And those of you who know them or have been to annual meetings in the last 20 years, you'll recognize the names. They've been part of my life since I was in high school in Norwich, Connecticut. They were members of the church that my father served. And they were very important to our youth group and have been friends, dear friends, ever since. We have a great history together. They're retired in Florida now, but they never miss an annual meeting. So in the foyer of the assembly hall, after the last business session, I was feeling a mixture of relief and exhaustion and surprise. I really didn't think all these votes would pass. Elaine and Carl came up to me, and Elaine grabbed me and hugged me, and she's about my size, so that was pretty easy. In the last couple years, Elaine has started to show signs of dementia. So one knows, never knows what is going to come out of her mouth or what she's going to do. But this was a very lucid moment when she gave, we were just talking about this earlier, a moment when she was aware of who she was and what she was saying. After she hugged me, she looked me straight in the eye and said, "You must be very proud. All this hard work for this whole year, God was watching." That was quite a reminder. I wasn't thinking of God watching at the time, so it was a wonderful reminder to me. A second story is from a recent visit to our daughter and son-in-law's home on Nantucket. To our 2.5-year-old grandson, I am Grampus. I could tell you that story, but it's too long. During the visit with this little guy, he decided to leave the family, there were several of us in the living room, and separate himself by crawling up the stairs to his bedroom. And after a few moments, I became concerned that nobody was paying any attention to the fact that this little 2.5-year-old was gone. So I said, "I'll go up and check on him." So I went up into his bedroom, and here he was sitting on the floor, and he looked up and he said to me, "Grampus, come play with me." So for a half an hour or so, I had this incredible time that I've never had before with our grandson. A sacred moment, if ever there was one. And you who are grandparents know exactly what I'm talking about. Another God moment happened 2 weeks ago when I preached at a Massachusetts church, which had joined the National Association just 2 years ago. And this was my first visit to the church. And during the time of fellowship, after the service, this tough-looking, rather large guy, 6'4", 6'5", came up to me and introduced himself in this gruff voice and said he's a trustee of the church. And he said something I honestly don't hear often from big, tough-looking trustees. We are so glad to be in the National Association. This church has had some very, very bad years. All we want to do, all we ever wanted to do, is further the work of Jesus Christ. And we're glad to find a home in which to do it. Wow. That was a moment of God's making. Let me recall another story in which God was certainly present. The Gospel of Luke recalls a day when Jesus is eating the meal in the home of a Pharisee, and he says to them, "Hey guys, let me tell you a little story." Now, when Jesus talks to the Pharisees and says something like, "Let me tell you a little story," something is going to be shared that is more than just a little story. People are probably going to be upset, maybe even enlightened or inspired, because he's going to call into question something they hold near and dear. That's the way his parables go. See what happens when he's done with this one. He says, "When you go to a banquet, you don't sit down at the head table. Someone more important than you might come along, and the host wants them to sit there. That would be embarrassing. Instead, sit down in the lowest place so that the host can move you up. Wouldn't that be great? Remember, all who exalt themselves will be humbled. All who humble themselves will be exalted." Did you hear that? There it was. Jesus put everyone in that room in a different place. All those who had been jockeying for position to sit near the host and be somebody, Jesus jolted them with a painful reminder that the world doesn't revolve around them, and that you can bet they were hurt, maybe even angered, by what he said. So I was reading this text last week, right after getting this incredibly complimentary letter from a colleague whom I've known for over 40 years. We went through CFTS and through seminary together. It was full of words of encouragement, flowery, made me stand tall. Well, that's an exaggeration, but you know what I mean. The same hour, I read an email from Barry asking me if I had any idea what the text was going to be for this sermon. So I turned to Luke and pow. The letter from my colleague took on a different meaning, a little ironic, I'd say. God has a sense of humor of reminding us at the most inopportune times of who we are and what we're supposed to be doing. The compliments were subtly put in perspective. Then I turn to open mail and I get this seething letter from a leader in one of our churches about the advice I gave the church in a conflict several weeks earlier. Without going into any detail, what I told them was, it is time for you as a congregational church to take your church back. And take it back from two or three people who were thinking more highly of themselves than they needed to or should have. I thought it was pretty congregational advice. This guy, who was one of the perpetrators, didn't quite agree. So again, Luke's passage hit me right between the eyes. Now, why did this story of Jesus's upset people so much? Why does it still irritate and inflame those who read it and hear it? Probably because if you take the word seriously, you understand that Jesus is talking about transformation, about going against the culture, taking a stand the way the world does things. Moving to a lower position in the room isn't a quick and simple solution to getting ahead in life. Jesus is saying there is a way of life. If you make a big deal of how humble you are, that's not quite what he's saying. You know, oh, never mind, I'll move to a different table. You can have the better seat, I don't mind. Right. It won't work. Remember what Marcus Aurelius said? Nothing is more scandalous than a person who is proud of their own humility. If you take a lower seat just because you're afraid of being embarrassed by being bumped from a higher seat, pretending to be humble just isn't the same as being humble. It was the reformer Martin Luther, who knew something about false pride, by the way, who concluded, "The humility of hypocrites is, of all pride, the greatest and the most haughty." Pretending to be humble is not holy, it's not real, and it doesn't work in the politics of heaven. Of course, many think the words of Muhammad Ali describe their feelings more accurately. He was interviewed on NBC years ago, and he said, "At home, I'm humble. I'm a nice guy. But I don't want the world to know that. Humble people, I have found, don't get very far." So we know what he did with that. So how do you do it? How does one go about being humble in a world that encourages us to live just for us? A world that says it's really all about you. I've been, for years, a lover of Joan Baez's music and her voice. I wasn't terribly impressed with her lifestyle, but... she said something that's very disturbing. "I've never had a humble opinion in my life. If you're going to have one, why bother to be humble about it?" So in light of our culture of me, how does one go about being humble? Hold that thought for a moment. Let's go back to the banquet. You will notice that there is some of the text cut from today's gospel reading. The lectionary doesn't include verses 2 through 6, a part of the story that has Jesus healing a man who wanders into that dinner party. The guy has a disease that is not deadly, but could, according to Jewish sanitary laws, have contaminated the eating area. I'm not sure what the people who devised the lectionary were thinking of when they cut those verses out, but maybe it's because last week's reading told of Jesus healing a person on the Sabbath, and those who devised the scheme of readings decided not to repeat themes 2 weeks in a row. But for us, this omission is important to the rest of the story. Jesus begins the meal by offering the host and guest, because offending the host and guest, because he doesn't ask permission to heal the man. He doesn't ask whether or not the guy can come back tomorrow, or to see if he would step aside or outside and away from everyone else to talk to Jesus. Right there in front of everyone, he heals the man. What makes matters worse, he makes no apology to the host. Instead, he further offends guests by telling them this little story. And in telling it, he says, "Grow up. Grow up. There are people here who need your help, and you're fighting over who gets to sit at the head table? Come on, give me a break." Or something like that. Here's the thing. When it's all about you, where it's all about me. Life is draining, tiring, and very lonely. You know what I mean? Make sure you're always on top. Make sure you're always getting the recognition you deserve. Make sure you're always accomplishing things on your own and taking credit for them. Make sure you shake the right hands, meet the right people. Make sure you spin the right stories so you come out looking good. It's exhausting. It's mentally, spiritually, physically exhausting. And it doesn't have to be this way. In fact, it's not supposed to be this way. For those original hearers, or for we who are here this morning, Christian people trying to be disciples in a meaningful way. It's not supposed to be like that. If we, as Jesus suggests, walk into situations unconcerned about upholding or terribly concerned about upholding a certain image of ourselves and thinking, what's in it for me? Or caring where we sit or who we sit next to. If we approach life rather aware of other people and aware of God's presence in our lives, through them, some amazing things can happen. We shift, we change, we open up, we grow up, we become more real, and we become more humble. We understand more clearly Jesus' beatitude. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. Our lives become a blessing to more people than we can count. That's how it's supposed to be. You know, I grew up in a time of one of my favorite popes, Pope John the 23rd. I think a very important pope to the Catholic Church, but certainly to the Christian Church as well. One of the stories, and it may be apocryphal, one of the stories told about him was that every once in a while he would disguise himself and sneak out of the Vatican and walk into the streets of the city to honor his role as a bishop of Rome. He would greet people, bless people, stop to speak to shopkeepers, and then quickly disappear back into the Vatican. That's an example of somebody who, by any stretch of the imagination, we would say, has a position of power and authority, and knows how to live humbly. Well, I suspect there are a lot of you here this morning that are like that. Today's story is a reminder to you and to me that the world does not revolve around us. But you and I are given permission to take a seat at the table and find a peace with God in ourselves and one another that will just astonish you.